Tatum, just get in the car.
Hello, Sydney.
Hi. Who is this?
You tell me.
Well, I have no idea.
Scary night, isn't it? With the murders and all, it's like right out of a horror movie or something.
Randy, you gave yourself away. Are you calling from work? Because Tatum's on her way over.
Do you like scary movies, Sydney?
I like that thing you're doing with your voice, Randy. It's sexy.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Oh, come on. You know I don't watch that shit.
Why not? Too scared?
No. No, it's just, what's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
Oh, welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or are best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Greg. Welcome to the podcast that we do on on movies and things.
You wouldn't know it, but Greg just had COVID. I know you're thinking he sounds completely normal, like well-versed
polished.
In podcasting. Polished. How you feeling, man?
I'm like a polished turd.
Yeah, nice.
I'm on the road to recovery, thank you. I think I'm about like a week and a half of symptoms, something like that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't recommend it, yes. But, you know, it seems to be everywhere, so whatever.
What can you do?
It has made me quite foggy-minded. Foggy of the mind is what I would probably call the old COVID. Foggy of the mind.
I saw something about that recently.
Yeah?
Like today I saw a headline about post-COVID brain fog, to which I immediately think, oh, maybe I've had COVID, and that's why I am. Maybe that's why I'm an idiot.
Yeah. I know that feeling too. Had I not had it, I'd be thinking maybe I had it. I would say it's foggier than what I thought foggy was.
Yeah.
I feel like this might be what baby brain, like when ladies are pregnant, quite a common, I guess, symptom, cause, yeah. Effect.
Yeah.
One of those words. Yeah. Is baby brain. You probably had a baby brain. I feel like this, we need to, maybe I'll ask a
maybe
mother
you're
who's
pregnant.
Well, that's the other thing. There has been some abdominal gains.
Oh, me too.
Nice.
That's so cute that we could sync this up.
Mm.
also, friends of the show, you can't really tell, I suppose, but first show of the new year, I'm not in New York yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some delays mm-hmm. on that front due to not me having COVID, but just the whole world generally having COVID and the rules that go in place on that front. But it's still happening. We've recorded a few episodes out of order, so I may say this a few times actually now that I think about it. But
time is but a human construct.
It's a flat circle,
we're,
man.
We're bending time, you might
We're
say.
Time benders. I've always thought so. Mm. Always been. But enough of that housekeeping. Mm-hmm. We're back. Happy New Year, all that kind of mm-hmm. thing. Happy post-COVID and whatever else goes along with that. Valentine's Day soon maybe, I don't know. My mother's birthday. Oh, friend of the show, my mother, turning 70 this weekend.
Happy birthday, Jude.
Happy birthday.
We love you.
Mum, we love you. And let's podcast. We're talking about Scream this week.
We are. We endeavoured. So our friends at Paramount kindly invited us to their press screening.
Yes.
Of the new Scream, and we were going to sort of weave that into this episode somewhat. However, I got COVID, so we couldn't attend. We don't have too much on the new one, but it is.
I did watch the other four.
There you go. It's getting good reviews, I believe.
It seems like very much on trend with these lega sequels, whatever you call them. It seems to be a little polarizing.
It follows on from the first one or something, doesn't it?
I'm not totally sure.
Mm.
It does seem a little polarizing. So I think with these long-term sequels, there's always like a pocket of haters. But overall, it seems to be, I've heard like it's a bit of a, pardon me, return to form in many ways, because four was a bit of a stinker, let's be honest.
Yeah, right. I haven't seen four.
And three. First two, great. But this came out in 1996, which is a year we've done, it feels like perhaps 10 times in a row at this point.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've got a shiny new member berry for us to explore. But
Oh, well, shiny's a strong word. I was just going to look around in music. You know, there's a few songs in this movie, so that got me thinking about music. And it turns out a lot happened in and around music in 1996, Tristan.
You don't say.
Yeah, that's right. We saw the formation of Coldplay. We saw the end of Fleetwood Mac. We saw the new edition of New Edition. Yeah, they reformed.
These timelines don't sync up to me. That's crazy.
Milli Vanilli, one of the Milli and or Vanilli, he got beat up with a baseball bat whilst trying to steal someone's car.
What?
In a cruel twist of justice. Such was the time for Milli and Vanilli in 96. So there's a lot going on. Shit. I think people were trying to kill Madonna.
Sean Penn.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
It was the first year that an Aussie band won the Triple J Hottest 100.
You're going to wear duvet, but was it Silverchair?
It was not. Good guess. Oh. It was a good guess, but it was not correct. Now, very quickly, Triple J's Hottest 100, we've probably talked about it at some point in this show. It's a bit of a cultural artifact here in Australia. Triple J.
Probably on this weekend.
Yeah, it probably is.
Maybe?
It'll be close to. Or next. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It is. Triple J is like a youth, cool-ish radio station.
Yeah.
And every year listeners vote for what the biggest song of the previous year was.
Past and future guest Hayden James has appeared on the Hottest 100 several times.
He has. He always
likely to appear this week once again.
That's right. Vote for him if you still can.
If you can still vote, yes.
Yeah. So started in 89, so we're about 6 years into it, and people were thinking, oh, we're never going to get an Aussie. I hope we weren't saying it like that.
Was it Frente?
It was not. It was, in fact,
I'm out of ideas.
Spider-Bait.
Really?
With Buy Me a Pony. Don't you want to be.
How does that go?
No. Yeah. I didn't.
No.
Yeah. COVID bait affected my ability to hum it to you.
Don't you wanna be a personality, an ocean in the sea, but you'll never make it if you can't shake it, so don't miss digging.
Interesting. It does sound familiar. It feels like it's been in a few commercials since then.
Many.
Maybe.
It was the song du jour. Advertisers flocked for that snappy number. Either you were selling a Hilux or a loaf of bread, you had to have Spider-Bait.
It was like an oat milk or something.
all of the above.
Yeah. Wow, that was the first one. Why not? That's crazy.
Well, if we, let's just, you know, you can edit this bit, but I'll just have a quick look. Like that was.
I mean, it's 96. So I wasn't at all tapped into this kind of thing back then. Not by any means. I was listening to fucking MC Hammer or something, wasn't I?
Well, the first winner was probably deserves its own little bit one done when we do 89, but Joy Division, Love Will Tear Us Apart, one, Smells Like Teen Spirit, one in 91. So they were quite often big, you know, non-Aussie songs.
Yeah. It's an interesting concept because typically it can be, I guess bands like Nirvana are big, but something that was like, too poppy wouldn't necessarily – poppy's not the right word. I just remember a few years ago, because the world has changed so much, the internet and yada, 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 there was like this campaign to make Taylor Swift win, which is very un-Hottest 100.
Yeah.
But there was technically no rule why they couldn't let it happen, but it just was very like, but that's not what this
– because they let Beyonce is. Or someone in.
Right.
Was it Beyonce?
Because there's no official criteria, right? Like it is any
song. Yeah, because Triple J's legacy was in, you know, it was a bit of ahead of the game in terms of its releases of music, ahead of the commercial.
Ahead of the curve here at Triple J.
That was their belief.
Yeah.
Cranberry's Zombie won in 94, Dennis Leary's Arsehole that we've talked about.
What, that one?
Yeah, 93, Beat Creep by Radiohead.
That one?
Yeah.
What? That's crazy. How did you even vote in those days?
Facts.
Yeah, fuck, probably. Wow. Big year for music, 96. Big year for movies too.
Big year for movies. We've talked about them. What have we got?
We got the full spectrum of from Independence Day to 101 Dalmatians. Would that have been a re-release? I assume so. The Nutty Professor was that year. We covered that. Jerry Maguire. We covered Jerry Maguire, didn't we? Jeez.
We did.
We're getting to the point where I forget episodes that we've done.
Oh, man. Every day. Yeah. I forget them every day. One goes in and one pops out.
Romeo and Juliet. But we're not here to talk about those films. We're here to talk about a little film called Scream. Scream came out in December of 1996, at least in the US. We got a little later down under.
97, it threw me. I was searching for 97 artifacts when Tristan said, 96 again, hey? Anyway, that's a bit of background for you and what we talk about off air.
Little inside baseball.
Yeah, a little Patreon nugget, perhaps.
Yeah, there you go. If that's what's got a Patreon, oh, Jesus Christ.
We're going to have to pay people.
Yeah. Budget of $15 million with a gross return of $173 million. Dollary dues. Big movie. Now, how was it received, you may ask? Well, critics generally liked it. Rotten Tomatoes score of 79%. Audience very much in lockstep with the critics on this one at 79%. You don't see this very often.
No.
It's a real beautiful moment.
What's it called? Has it got a name?
What? When they're the same? Harmony. Yeah, it's kind of a beautiful thing. Feels low to me though, maybe. We'll get into that.
79, yeah.
Because Scream 2, so the official rankings on Rotten Tomatoes, Scream 2 is 81%, so Scream 2 beats it. And then number 3 is the new Scream at 75%. Scream 4, 61%. Scream 3, 41%. Anyway, we're not talking about those, not today. They get their own podcast at some point. Critic consensus for this one was as follows. Horror icon Wes Craven's subversive deconstruction of the genre is sly, witty, and surprisingly effective as a slasher film itself, even if it's a little too cheeky for some.
Cheeky foursome.
Who doesn't like a cheeky foursome? Big movie for you, Greg?
Yeah. I can't tell you too many details about why. I think I saw this at the cinema and I thought that I remember people cheering in the opening scene, which was funny because we were talking about this whole movie cheering thing with that Spider-Man clip that's doing the rounds of everyone losing it when Spider-Man saves Zendaya, Garfield saves Zendaya in the new one. Spoiler. But then I was like, well, maybe my memory's just getting muddled up because then I started watching Scream 2 and there's all that screaming in the cinema at the beginning and I don't know what's
like,
real.
Wait, was I there?
Was I on a date with Jada Pinkett?
Damn.
Me.
Screamy. That opening is hard. I mean, oh, fuck.
So
I think I saw this at cinema.
Yeah, you did?
Did you? So do you think you did?
I think I did and I'm pretty sure people were like cheering in that opening scene, but I could be wrong, but I definitely saw it at the movies.
So I'm pretty sure I saw it at the movies with my mother. I think we've talked before about how at various stages, like especially pre-film student Tristan, when I really didn't know shit, she helped me make some good choices and this was one of them.
She heard
that this was like a really interesting, you know, self-referential thing and we went to see it together. Now, I may be getting my wires crossed on Scream 1 versus Scream 2. I definitely watched it with my mum. I'm pretty sure I watched Scream 1 at the cinema or maybe we watched it on video and then watched Scream 2 at the cinema. Yeah. I'm a little unsure. There's something foggy going on there. But in any case, it kind of blew my mind, I think, on a few levels. Like the whole self-referential
boobs
thing was just new to me. I don't think I knew what a trope was. You know, like it introduced some of these concepts to me. And Jamie Kennedy's character, like I was like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, okay. I didn't know that these were things. Although ironically, I guess somewhat lost on 12-year-old me because I hadn't seen all the things it was necessarily referencing. But just the concept of it was like, I remember it being like pretty mind-blowing. So a seed was planted that day in what would become – pretentious film student Tristan would emerge years later.
That's interesting.
For the record, I was never a film student. Just acted like
you were. Aren't we all students of the theatre?
It's very astute on your part.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. But it was a big deal, wasn't it? And I remember it was also the reintroduction of horror because there was,
yeah,
you know, Freddie and Jason were pretty long in the tooth. You know, I know they've kicked on and even had some resurgence with the Halloweens and things, but they were pretty long in the tooth at the time. Mid-90s, they were kind of on the nose a bit. You certainly weren't getting any of the caliber of talent or, you know, popularity that we saw in this cast. You know, Neve Campbell was already doing stuff. Obviously, Drew Barrymore at the beginning there, she was having a moment.
Big time. I got a bit on that in the rewatch. But
Courtney Cox.
But, yeah, that's a huge differentiator. I was thinking, not to jump too far ahead, but I was thinking it was a little bit like when we did Con Air.
Yeah, yeah.
And this idea of taking a genre that, you know, hey, we love our action movies, but taking a genre that isn't necessarily known for having the best actors and sticking them all in there, like having John Malkovich in there, having Nicolas Cage in there, you know, that kind of shit. And I feel like this movie was kind of similar. Like the horror movies, often low budget, unknowns, and they get all these people in that are like kick ass. I mean, all the performance, we'll get into all that stuff. But on that note, I do remember even just the character of Dewey himself being like mind-blowing. I remember just loving Dewey so much.
He was lovable. He was very lovable.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to contradict myself on this later because the timeline's a bit funny. But now that my memory has been jogged, I do remember actually being quite terrified after watching this movie. I think I think we talked before how I'd watched all the Freddy movies when I was a little kid. For whatever reason, my mum was cool with that. And for whatever reason, I didn't really get scared by that. And then this, I think just the ordinariness of like it's just a guy with a knife. There's no supernatural element. It's just an off-the-shelf mask. Like that shit, I think, got to me.
Yeah, which you're describing another film we can probably compare a bit later perhaps if we get around to it. But that's the premise of one of the greats, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think even more so in this one potentially, but we'll get into that. But also I hadn't seen that movie at that point, so who the fuck knows.
Yeah.
But then I think in the subsequent years though, that because of the scary movies of the world, I kind of forgot that this movie was actually scary too. And I just kind of almost thought of this as like, oh, that it's like a comedy really.
Yeah.
These were interesting mindsets for a rewatch because there was a few kind of mental readjustments that had to occur in the first 10 minutes alone.
The other thing I'd quickly reference for my memory of this film was that's a weird way to make popcorn.
Yeah, I don't think we ever had that in Australia, or maybe not since the 60s or something. I was watching a CinemaSins video on it and even they called out that no one did that then in the US. So I guess it might just be a artistic choice because it works. But yeah, that always distracts me almost. Like, but what is that? It's a clever device, but we have microwaves. did you have a popcorn maker when you were a kid?
Nah. Oh, maybe.
It was like a fad. You remember all these desktop kitchen
single-use
things?
Oh, don't get me started on those. I had a pie maker. It was the bane of my existence because I never used it.
Yeah.
I haggled my parents for this pie maker and never used it, and they used to never shut up about, why don't you use the pie maker? Shut up.
Yeah.
Forget it.
The popcorn maker I got as a gift one year for Christmas, I think, and I used it like 10 times in one day and then probably never again. I think I got a pie maker too and I never used that.
Consumerism,
there was definitely a couple more things. Yeah. It must have been like some technology or something, like the Teflon or I don't know what it was, but something that just made these things –
so bad.
Makeable
all
now.
Landfill.
Yeah. The George Foreman grill is not one of those. That got a lot of use. Of
that's a kitchen. Yeah. That's a kitchen in itself.
Oh, fuck, I might get another one, you know. Man, like why the fuck not?
Why don't you tell us about the story of origin for this film?
Yes, yeah, it's a good call, Greg. I'll do just that.
Origin story.
Thanks, Hockey.
This film was written by Kevin Williamson.
Ah, a Australian singer-songwriter. That's John Williams.
I was going to make that joke, and I thought I was reaching. But yeah, Dax popped into my head too. Hey, True Blue. Is it me and you?
Song.
Is it mum and dad? Is it a cockatoo?
Maybe he's trying to guess who the killer is. Is it your mum and dad?
Yeah, right. Is it a cockatoo?
No, everyone's a suspect.
Really makes you think. But Kevin Williamson, we have talked about before on this very podcast on an episode based on an episode focused on I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Mm.
Same guy over here.
Oh, yeah.
Also the same guy that would go, well, hear me out because there is some range here, would go on to make Dawson's Creek loosely based on himself.
Mm.
So this guy is Dawson. This was written by Dawson.
Old Crybaby Williamson, they used to call him.
Old Crybaby Dawson. He looked 40 when he was 16.
Just the actor.
He's an interesting guy, though.
He is.
I feel like we've made fun of Dawson's Creek before, and don't get me wrong, I loved it growing up, mainly because of Joey.
Mm.
But the dialogue in that show is just absurd. But I think now I can maybe appreciate it upon reflection and appreciate its absurdity. But
do you know who was underrated in that in terms of hotness?
Who?
Jen.
The mum.
Grandma.
Yeah, you have a type, don't you? Sally Field. Greg Zoom background is Sally Field, by the way. But this guy is actually very interesting. Because I know we didn't love, I know we touched on this in I Know What You Did Last Summer, the fact that he also wrote Scream. But because we were so focused on I Know What You Did Last Summer, I kind of thought, I don't know, this guy, he probably just got lucky with Scream. But as I learned more about him, he's very interesting. He's a very interesting fellow. He also wrote The Faculty, directed by Robert Rodriguez, starring Usher and a few others. But Usher's in it. And before all of that, he actually was trying to become an actor.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in a few episodes of Another World. No, A Different World. A Different World. I think A Different World. And in Living Colour.
Yeah.
Sketch comedy, Living Colour. He was in a Roger Corman movie. He was in a few music videos. But at some point, for whatever reason, could not find the details, he pivoted to writing and took a screenwriting class at UCLA where he wrote his first script titled Killing Mrs. Tingle, which would eventually become Teaching Mrs. Tingle, another Joey Potter vehicle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this guy had a bit of a stranglehold on my youth. Almost like Dawson's Creek, Scream. These were very influential things at the time. Now, he actually had his big break off the back of the Killing Mrs. Tingle script that he wrote at uni, essentially. He sold it. And he's like, this is it. I fucking made it. But he learned a lesson that day, Greg. He learned about a little place we like to call development hell.
Ah.
Because that's where his script would stay for many, many years. And he's like, okay, fuck. I sold that script, but I got bills piling up over here. That movie's not getting made. Yeah, probably did. Put a fucking diamond in his tooth and got a rocket car.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed money. And he's like, fuck, what else I got? And he remembered, actually, he did have something else in his hot little hand, a little 18-page treatment for a scary movie that he had called Scary Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. I think we all know why that's interesting. And what I didn't realize was that was based on very loose, inspired by a true story. So he had read this article about the Gainesville killer. No, the Gainesville Ripper. Have you heard about this?
I had a quick Google. Someone in Florida killing people.
Yeah. It's pretty heavy stuff, man. I mean, all murder is pretty heavy stuff, but there's some pure evil at play here, which a bit like what scared me in this movie, there appears to be no motive, just a fucked up human. Mm. The Gainesville Ripper was a 1990 serial killer who murdered 5 students in Gainesville, Florida.
Damn.
He was executed in 2006, but his his craft. Fucked upness, his, yeah, fuck, what do you say? Decapitations, posing of the crimes. Bodies in various positions. Yeah, his crimes, his murders. And just these traces of pure evilness, like he did these things and then like took a shower in the house before he left. Like just things that are...
Proper psycho.
Yeah, in one scenario he thought he left his wallet there, so he went back to find his wallet and then also just cut off the head of the body and like put it somewhere else. Oh. Like it's just fucked up. And while there wasn't a clear motive, there was a pattern. So all but one victim were petite Caucasian brunettes with brown eyes, which apparently looked like his mother.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at your Zoom background of Sally Field right now and fuck, she I'm glad she made it through that safely.
Mm. I don't know how much time she spent in Gainesville.
True. Rightly so.
Maybe Smokey and the Bandit were down there. They could have been.
True. But at least she was with...
Bert Newton.
Bandit? Yeah.
It's not Bert Newton, is it? Surprise.
I want to Photoshop all Bert... I used to Photoshop Bert Reynolds movie posters and put Bert Newton in there. That's art. That is art. Anyway, he reads this article. That night he gets home and the window's open and he has a little bit of a freak out moment. But it inspires him to write this thing. So he just sits down and powers out this treatment about a woman home alone, taunted on the phone and eventually killed by this masked killer.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't fully fleshed it out though, but like I said, he had this thing, he wrote it, it was an idea, it's kind of on the shelf. The Killing Mrs. Tingle thing got stuck and he's like, all right, I'm going back to this. He locks himself in a bloody hotel or something and smashes it out in 3 days. And in addition to writing this script that we watched, known as Scream, he also wrote 5-page treatments for potential sequels, because he had this idea, to your point, Greg, that at this point we were at a stage in the life cycle of horror and specifically slasher films,
mm-hmm.
Where it was kind of dead. Mm. And so I think he saw an opportunity. Yeah, I think he saw this script as the phoenix that could rise from the ashes and introduce a new era. An era where we get, you know, all these movies that followed, which I guess were all written by him, like I know what he did last summer.
Mm. Well, there were some others.
There were others.
There was The Blair Witch, the Japanese adaptations.
Yeah.
The Ring and The Grudge.
And there were like these other ones I was reading, the movies that you forget existed. I'm not even sure if I saw them, but like Cherry Falls and Urban Legend. You know those movies,
yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, you get some teen idols in there and yeah, it was like Final Destination. It was a thing. Yeah, yeah. It was like this new form of horror, teen. I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
This, a bit like Halloween and all the things that followed, like I don't think any of them were as intelligent as this one necessarily, but it definitely kicked off a trend.
Mm-hmm. A trendsetter, as it were.
A trendsetter in many, many ways. And so he was right. So... after a bit of a slow initial response, he did eventually, like over the course of like 3 days or something, sell it to Miramax for $400,000. And what I should say, of course, Cordell, all of this is he's a horror mega fan. So when he decides to flesh this thing out, he really leans into the self-referential, genre-referential element of the film. Like I guess that's the special sauce that is throughout. He basically wanted to write a movie that he would want to watch. And I suppose others wanted to watch it too, including Bob Weinstein, who bought it for $400,000.
Mm.
Now, Bob Weinstein tried to bring Wes Craven in immediately and Wes Craven was hesitant because he was a little – his career was not in the best shape. I think the last movie he had done at this point was Vampire in Brooklyn with Eddie Murphy.
Oh.
Which I'm really keen to check out because
it's a great
moment. I maybe saw it. One of the best. I feel like I maybe saw it back in the day, but I'm just curious about it now. And he was just a bit sour on the whole genre, I guess maybe, again, due to where the life cycle of it was. He was felt it's inherently pretty misogynistic and he just wanted to kind of do different shit. And so Weinstein went around and spoke to some other people. Some notable names included Robert Rodriguez, Danny Boyle, George A. Romero.
Wow.
Sam Raimi. I would love to see any of them do a Scream movie. In fact, why don't give each of them a sequel? Like, that would be pretty fucking cool.
Mm.
Like, just see different spins on this same concept. Like, they would all have a unique spin.
They're all good names.
Yeah, it works. It works. Anyway, eventually Drew Barrymore hears about it and wants to be involved, and she gets cast in the lead as Sydney. And this actually got Wes Craven to reconsider, because he's like, oh, wait, we're doing like big names in horror movies now? This is different. He's like, oh, okay, wait, hang on. Maybe I am dealing with something different here. And then it all kind of snowballed from there, and really very much from the involvement of Drew Barrymore. And the other thing that Drew Barrymore did that really fucking took this thing next level, which, respect, I had no idea about this. She was the one that actually decided, you know what, I shouldn't play Sydney. Let me die in the first scene. I'll play the character that dies in the first scene.
Yeah, nice.
Again, something that was lost on 12-year-old Tristan, because I didn't know who she was then. Mm. But I suppose to the general public, she was positioned as the star of the movie and then she died. It was like a...
And isn't mentioned again.
Yeah, yeah. Like a Ned Stark situation.
Whoa.
Spoilers for season one of a show that came out 20 years ago, 10 years ago.
Wow. Next you'll be spoilerizing that Breaking Bad show.
So this was an interesting thing. All these interesting pieces were starting to form. I won't go deep into the cast at this point, because I think we can probably talk a lot about that in the rewatch, because they're awesome. But there are some interesting precasters that I do want to mention. So as I mentioned, Drew Barrymore was supposed to be Sydney. She pivoted to become the first victim, and so they needed a Sydney. Wes Craven, apparently a Party of Five fan, he's an interesting guy, invited Neve Campbell to audition. She got the part. Yep, awesome, good stuff.
Bailey, this is the 13th time you've cried today, Bailey.
What's interesting as well, because the same guy wrote I Know You Did Last Summer, and the lead in that is also from Party of Five.
Mm.
So why didn't fucking Bailey get to be in The Faculty or something, you know? Finish the Party of Five.
He just likes the girls. I just watch it for the women.
But when it came to casting Gail Weathers, it was a little bit different.
Gail Swallows.
Brooke Shields auditioned. Janine Garofalo auditioned. Courtney Cox wanted it bad. And she had to campaign for it because, yeah, she did. They didn't want her, man, because she's, you know, she's Monica.
Monica.
And she's all, you know, Monica-like. And this would be a departure, which is exactly why she wanted to do it, fair enough. And, you know, she eventually got her way. And, man, similarly, Billy Loomis, played by Skeet Ulrich.
Skeet. What an unfortunate name.
I know, right? David Arquette was asked to audition for that role. And he's like, actually, I want to do Dewey. Which was a unique spin, because Dewey was written as a big jock type and he had a whole different spin on it, and they were like, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Let's do that.
Love it.
Yeah, I love that kind of shit. It's so weird, man. This is like the every once in a while, one actor comes along for one role and I don't care what else they do for the rest of their career. It's just perfection. More on that later. Matthew Lillard, is it Willard or Lillard?
I think it's Lillard.
Shaggy. Like, Lillard, yeah. Like, I think I got auto-corrected. He got cast as Stu by accident. He was just with his girlfriend down the hall, and he got, like, his girlfriend was auditioning for some other thing. He got pulled in for this bloody thing, and they said, hey, we want you to audition for us, and there you go, bish, bash, posh, you're in the movie. One last pre-casty before it went to Jamie Kennedy, but it was nearly Breckenmeyer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But Jamie Kennedy, again, yeah, it's some fucking good casting in this movie.
Mm.
Not a huge Jamie Kennedy fan necessarily, but fucking bang on. It's just perfect.
He's so 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, one more thing before I bish-bash-bosh this thing, the mask. The mask itself. So in the script, the mask was just, it wasn't that detailed. It wasn't explained what it looked like. And so the costumes designers went all a little crazy coming up with different concepts, very much like the story in Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And again, very much like the story in Halloween, well, not so much in the specifics, but in terms of going back to basics, when they were location scouting for houses in one of the houses, they just found their mask. So it was a mask that was already produced.
Was it a soiled mask?
Yeah, and they were like, oh, that's fucking creepy. Let's just get that. And so they literally bought off-the-shelf masks. They didn't even alter it. So at least with Halloween, there was some alterations made that made it kind of a unique thing. But this is literally, that mask existed. You could buy that at costume Halloween stores, whatever. Mm. So very, very interesting. And again, arguably what makes it a little scary. But if you're curious, it's the peanut-eyed ghost, apparently, that mask. Later renamed Ghostface.
The penis-eyed ghost.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, dick eyes.
Yeah. Oh, dick eyes. And then they changed the name to Scream. Bish, bash, bosh, he goes off a movie, rap party, down to the Viper Room. Yeah, this is a Viper Room scenario.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Let's play the trailer.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies. Now, he's taken his love of fear.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney.
One step too far.
Do you like scary movies?
What's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a scary movie. Number one, you can never have sex.
Hey, it's me.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
Get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back.
Who did he make the rules?
The police are always on track. If they watch Palm Night, they save time.
He just kills by them. Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to hide.
Everybody's a suspect!
You're not scared, are you?
Scream.
Funny, some of the like the fonts and shit in that you don't necessarily associate with the Scream brand anymore, but it's very 1996, isn't it? That like weird, that funky, gritty little font. Yeah, what do you call that?
Newspapery kind of.
Yeah. Rough edges and all that shit. Yeah. Rough. Good trailer though. Greg, do you want to break this puppy down for us?
Yeah. Look, I think most of us are probably pretty familiar with this.
Mm.
So we open on Drew Barrymore.
Mm.
And Drew Barrymore is home alone. She's a good-looking girl in a good-looking house.
Yeah.
If you dubbed the dialogue, you could be in the opening of a Nancy Meyer film. Meyer?
I didn't care how you say it. It's great. That was nice.
But we're not, Tristan.
She always has good kitchens. You're right. It's very stood on your part.
Thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
I follow Nancy Meyer Interiors on Instagram.
Really?
I do.
Oh, interesting.
But it's not Tristan, and we're not, and it's not.
Right. That's a fact.
The phone rings. In a sign of different times, she not only answers the phone but proceeds to flirt with this stranger with a horrible voice.
Hello.
Yeah. She says she doesn't have a boyfriend initially.
Wow. Imagine if it was a boyfriend. You're like, yeah, this was a test.
Bit of a strumpet, if you ask me.
Mm, yeah, the old oven got a boyfriend. I'll just see where this call goes with this ugly voice. The call takes a turn for the deadly when Drew Barrymore fails to answer the horror movie quiz correctly that the sexy caller has been playing her through.
Yeah. Yeah, but you do all right with your words there, Greg?
Killing it. Murder ensues, Tristan. Murder.
Oh, boy, does it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are then introduced to quintessential girl next door, Sydney Prescott. She has freckles, a ponytail, squeaky voice, and a frail, submissive-looking frame. The kind of heroine James Cameron talks about. It's the anniversary of Sydney's mother.
She does have a Linda Hamilton quality to her, does she?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, they kind of look alike.
Terminator 1.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Continue. But they kind of do, yeah.
Yeah, we'll come back to that because we were talking about it during the week. It's the anniversary of Sydney's mother's brutal rape and murder. Now, the killer is behind bars, ID'd by Sydney herself 1 year earlier.
Mm.
But is it the right killer? And as the body count grows, Sydney is quickly forced to question everyone and everything.
Mm.
Whilst the guy with the costume from Scream, aka this movie, goes about killing everyone, adhering to the tropes of the horror movies that we know and love.
Mm.
It's self-aware, it's a scare, it's a scream.
Why didn't... Okay, friends of Paramount, why don't you get Greg to do the trailer for the next one? Scream 6, get Greg in there. nice. I like it. I like it a lot, Greg. I think you really you really nailed it.
Thanks,
hey,
mate.
Right off the bat, ever since we did GoldenEye, I've always realized I enjoy a film opening that works almost as a short film. So like from now on I decided I'm just gonna call it the GoldenEye Award. This film gets a GoldenEye Award because that opening is just basically a, I guess that was the 18-page treatment initially that he described. It's just like that on its own is just like a great short film.
I'm doing the Italian kiss of the fingers here.
Yeah. Very ethnic. It's good stuff, man.
Isn't it?
It's got it all. It's terrifying. It's so brutal. That goes for the whole movie. It's so brutal. Like I said, I think it's because of the scary movies of the world, I've kind of forgotten that this was actually scary, and I've kind of got the two kind of muddled up a bit in my head and like, I remember that this like, you know, self-aware and that kind of shit, and I guess I kind of just got that tangled up with it being just a parody, which of course it's not. It's still a slasher movie. It's still fucking brutal.
Yeah. And that
when her parents arrive back and she's like, man, and she's still on the phone.
She won't let go of that phone.
That's horror, man. That's fucked up. Oh, how's the rewatch for you?
Yeah, mate, it was a treat. My first point as well was how about that opening sequence? It's very aesthetically pleasing as well. Like,
yeah.
It's just, it's a nice, juxtaposition of she looks beautiful in this beautiful house, all sort of a particular, you know, soft palette. And then all of a sudden, like, the blood goes everywhere. So there was a good tension there.
And the rising tension, yeah. Like, it really just is this
it looked slow, out of place.
Then I guess, pretty sudden build. But, yeah.
But, it works. But, that sort of horror is not – it's usually a creepy, you know, haunted house or something that's not as – that could, as I say, like, I sort of joked about the Nancy Meyer thing, but – Maya, whatever. But it does look like the set of a different type of movie almost.
And it's shot, I don't know how to say it, I don't have the knowledge to articulate this well, but I think it's what you're saying too. It's like it doesn't immediately look like, slasher movie. Like it's a well-lit Nancy Meyers interior.
Yeah.
It's an A-lister. It's some really quality banter. And then suddenly it's horrifying.
and then it's on.
And I think the same goes for the rest of the movie. I think that when I read some of the reviews, it's almost like they're saying that because of how it makes fun of the genre, it's hard to take the scares seriously. But for me, I think it's the opposite. And the fact that it acts so light and then is so dark makes the darkness feel so fucking dark. Like it... I think I was trying to analyze, like, why do I find this versus other things so, like, horrifying? I think that's one angle, is just that it's I don't know, once you're watching a Freddy movie, the whole thing's dark and it's all, you know, so surreal and everything's over the top. There's such stark contrast between the horror and the lightness in this movie that it fucking gets me.
Yeah.
Gets me.
Yeah, it totally works. It's that was, you know, from the get-go, you're on board and you're in. It was the fashion, you know, it's interesting. We talk about that sort of purgatory that fashion trends go through. This one's kind of half one foot in, one foot out. I feel like the girls' fashion was on point for today's time. There was a lot of sort of loose-fitting jeans.
Yeah, pretty much there.
Neutral, natural fiber sweaters.
Yeah.
All looked good. Except the
guys are wearing those baggy button down shirts and things.
Yeah, a lot of green.
Yeah, there is a lot of green.
And stripes.
Why is that?
Yeah, horizontal stripes.
Yeah, and spiky hair and stuff.
The girls look good. Sydney look good.
It's pretty much on point, isn't it? Yeah, it's funny how the men's and women's stuff doesn't come back in sync.
But again, having said that, the girls weren't all, what's her name? Oh, gosh, I forget the actress's name. COVID brain, the girl that dies in the garage door.
Yeah, Rose McGowan.
Rose McGowan, sorry. Her outfits are a little, they haven't probably stood the test of time as well.
No, probably less so.
Less so.
Dewey was just as great as I remember. And I think, again, like the scary movie thing, I kind of forgot how great a character Dewey was, and because I just kind of think I got it mixed up with Doofy. It's a lot more subtle than Doofy, let's put it that way. It's what a wonderful character.
Yeah.
It's just so great. And then I loved hearing that was his take on it. It wasn't supposed to be, like, he was supposed to be a bit, you know, slow or whatever. Not slow, but like not as good as he thinks he is kind of thing. That was, I think, the original idea of the character, like a jock that isn't quite as.
And you'd expect the jock as well, right? Like that's kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he managed to subvert it without sort of getting in the way of the overall movie.
Yeah. Just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And then Dewey and Gail together, that is just some like weird energy that I just love, man. And that same music comes on each time. They're like having their little flirty band. I mean, it obviously was real because they got married after this.
Yeah, they met here, right?
Yeah.
You know, he was only like, he was literally 25 in this movie, because I watched this with Carol and I was like, he's younger? Wait, he was 25 in this. She said he looked 25. I didn't, maybe it's the mustache. I thought he was 40-ish.
The mustache is so funny too. It's like so oddly groomed. Like it's all these little touches. But he was auditioning. They wanted him to audition for one of the high school kids. So I guess he's supposed to be not too much older. I don't know how old she was, but
slightly.
She's
about 7 years older than him, I think.
Yeah, right. That is some magical chemistry that I feel like I haven't seen in a while, at least in the movies we tend to cover. It's something, there's some magic there, man. There's magic. And I was saying to Greg off mic before, my background is Dewey and Gail Weathers on Zoom. And Greg slyly implied that this picture of Courtney Cox could almost be, what did you call her? The something sister of Sally Field?
I can't remember.
COVID brain. baby brain. I said, the hot sister.
Oh, yeah.
And I stand by that, man. Courtney Cox, 90s babe. And I didn't think she was a babe in the 90s, but now in my perception of what the 90s aesthetic is, she's like in that zone. Like her and Jennifer Aniston, man, that's like an iconic 90s babe aesthetic. And then in Scream 2, you know, it only gets better. By Scream 3, she gets that terrible haircut, which even, hey, I'm not being sexist, even she admits was a terrible haircut.
Oh, the old, jagged little fringe.
The whole cast, Greg. What a fucking great cast.
Wasn't Wes really trying to find his next Johnny Depp there with Skeet Ulrich?
Yeah, I'm sure that was a conscious choice, right?
Because Wes obviously discovered Johnny in Nightmare on Elm Street Part 1, and Johnny Depp's gone on to be one of the biggest film stars of all time.
Everything's a fucking reference in this movie, so surely that's like an intentional. His name's Loomis as well, of course.
Skeet.
Skeet.
I looked that up because I felt, I mean, to skeet in modern vernacular is to ejaculate, if you don't know.
They're correct.
Skeet, skeet, correct. Skeet. Just ask Lil Jon.
Yeah.
It's not a name you give yourself, but his nickname was Skeeter, apparently, because I don't know why he was called that, but he was fast and wiry, apparently, in school sports.
Oh, there you go.
Mm.
Is his name based on being called Skeeter?
Mm.
It was a nickname.
Yeah, Skeeter was his nickname, and so he ran with Skeet. And then Ulrich is his stepdad's name who raised him, apparently. It wasn't his biological.
Oh, so it's all lies.
Son. Yeah.
Jeez.
His family's big in the.
Where was he in 1990? Gainesville, Florida, by any chance?
He could have been because his family is big in the NASCAR circuit.
Really?
You'd be
wow.
Surprised to know. Well, not surprised. I'm not sure. It's up to you how you feel about that.
I'm glad I know. I enjoy that fact, I suppose. Mm. So I'm very grateful for that.
I'm sure all the listeners are. You're welcome, peeps. That's everyone is now dumber from listening to them.
Should we just go through the cast real quick and just give them like, you know, little performance reviews?
Yeah. Do you want anything else you want to say about Skeet?
Skeet, he's there. He's really good.
He likes looking down, like he bends his head forward when he talks, so he's looking up. But his chin's
it's almost
tucked.
Like I don't know if this was intentional so much, but it is almost like it's very teen hot guy acting, but almost to the point of parody. Like it's he's a weird little guy. We talked about David Arquette. We talked a bit about Courtney Cox. Should we talk Nev? She's fucking great in this movie. We're big fans, obviously.
Such a big fan. I was reminded how much of a thing I had for her when I was this age watching this movie. Like,
because even Party of Five was a big deal.
Yeah, I hated Party of Five though because everyone cried all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They used to do that sketch on Full Frontal, right?
Yeah.
Fast forward.
Always crying.
Bailey.
I just can't open my big beans. She's such a babe. I mean, they did ham it up in hindsight. The whole girl next door thing was like played out to the max with the nighty and the shh, my dad will hear us.
Yeah, but also like that's the trope of the genre too. So it's all like, you know. But she's a good character because, you know, Greg mentioned before, we were talking earlier in the week about what were we talking about? How did it come up? We were talking about James Cameron and how, you know, he's very self-congratulatory on the strong female characters front. Yet, you know, Alien 1 was Ridley Scott and in the script, Ripley wasn't even written as a woman necessarily. I guess it was written as a man, I suppose. Mm. They weren't like overtly gendered and they just decided to make that one a female. Mm. So he didn't invent Ripley, first of all. One character he did invent was what's her name?
Sarah Connor.
Which, you know, he's very quick to pat himself on the back about. But that whole thing of how fucking, when you read the original script of how he introduces her in the script.
She wasn't really heroine material, was she?
So in the first few pages of the script, Sarah Connor is written as 19 small and delicate features. Pretty in a flawed, accessible way.
Accessible.
She doesn't stop the party when she walks in, but you'd like to get to know her.
You would.
Yeah, but you would, yeah. Couple of beers. Her vulnerable quality masks a strength even she doesn't know exists. So again, obviously this film has nothing to do with the Terminator, but it did just ring a bell. And watching this movie, Sydney's a pretty great character. And I thought this could be a good test we could do moving forward when we have leading ladies to see, you know, from the outset, how have they been written? Are we dealing with good stuff here? And, you know, especially in contrast to that, this one ain't bad. I looked up the script and what did it say? Sydney Prescott, a young girl of 17, sits, her face glued to the computer monitor in front of her, sharp and clever with deep lonely eyes. She's comfortable in a plain flannel nightgown. That's kind of all there is to it. There's not this whole fucking prose about how hot she is and whether you would or not. Like, I was glad to read that. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think she's a pretty good character, right?
Like I think she's great. She kicks ass in this. She punches the other chick.
Yeah, she kicks ass. She still does. It's still fun because she still does the, like, you know, she runs upstairs when she should run out the door, and then she does it 5 minutes later, and you know, all that stuff's a bit of fun.
Well, look, unless we've been in that situation, we can't really judge, can we?
Fuck, man, I'd do it.
I'd wee my pants.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, she's good.
She's good. I like her. I read about her. Did we talk about her sort of career trajectory last time we spoke about her? I can't remember.
I don't think we did,
because she kind of. She was Miss Horror, wasn't she? And then she kind of disappeared a little bit. And, you know, she is one of those actresses or actors that went, I'm getting typecast. I don't want to be a typecast. I want to do other shit.
Yeah.
And she didn't love LA. She didn't love Hollywood. So she moved to London in it.
Oh, right.
And started doing theatre and sort of work that interested her. And she loved it because no one really knew who she was. And she was relatively anonymous over there. And she's done some interesting work of late. She's sort of back doing, you know, larger film productions and things, and doing some interesting bits and pieces, and getting a bit of critical acclaim too. So we certainly haven't seen the last of Neve Campbell.
Damn right. I mean, she played The Rock's wife at some point, didn't she?
Did she?
In that Die Hard, but it's The Rock movie.
Which one's that? It's all of them, isn't it?
You know, as the director said, you know, you got Die Hard, you got. The Tower Inferno, and this is, you know, a combination of both. But wait, you've only got one leg. And I said, you're a crazy motherfucker, I'm in.
That's what an interview where he pretty much said that. They're like, what are you talking about? So he has one leg.
Yeah, right.
For no reason, he's got one leg. But well, she's in it. Shows his range. She's apparently good in that. I'm never going to watch that.
I'll watch it now.
I'll watch it on a flight or something. It's a flight movie. And I think some of the beauty of the cast here is it runs deep. I think, like, you got your Jamie Kennedy is great. Matthew Lillard is great. Rose McGowan, she's cool.
The Matthew Lillard bit, he just a little bit overdone in that final scene.
Yeah. I saw an interview with him talking about it. He's like, what the fuck was I doing? I look at that now and I'm like, ugh.
And are they meant to be lovers?
Why am I spitting so much?
He's literally like full crazy spit. And then I think it was
like one of his first movies or something. Yeah.
He's like cuddling over the shoulder of Skeet, like his chin resting on the other guy's clavicle from behind, just we're killing everyone. That's why the scary movie's so good, when he goes, we're gay. And he goes, I'm not gay. What do you mean? The trouble ship to San Francisco. What about our night in Vermont? Hey, you sucked my dick.
That's right.
Sorry. But
I
it was
watch Scary it Movie.
Was, yeah, I watched Scary Movie before this. But he's a bit OTT in that scene, to a point where you're like, what are you doing?
It's one of those ones too, which I think is maybe even an unintentional trope that I always struggle with, is like a character completely changing once they're revealed to be the killer. Like, they just act crazier.
Mm.
It's like, if you're that crazy, you couldn't just pretend to be normal. I mean, he's a little bit weird throughout the whole movie, of course, but it gets to such an over-the-top point.
Fully.
What the fuck is he doing? But I love that guy. I love that actor, man. He seems like a really – I've seen him interviewed. I think we must have done another movie with him. I can't remember what. And I must have gone down a rabbit hole. And he just seems like a lovely dude.
Yeah, he's like a
obviously
family
he
man.
Became, yeah, and he became like a pitch perfect Shaggy. And he does the voice on the animated series and shit.
Yeah,
now.
He's got a body of work as Shaggy that would fill a career.
Yeah. Like, he could just be Shaggy. Although he got fucked because they made a new animated movie and they didn't cast any of the TV series in the movie, including himself. So, like, that's bullshit. He is Shaggy. He's Shaggy, man. Motherfuckers. A few deep cuts. Henry Winkler. I forgot he was in this altogether. He's just such an interesting dude. He's like, he played the coolest guy in the world and then never played a cool guy again ever in anything. He's so
What about Waterboy? He's pretty cool in Waterboy.
I can't really remember. Wasn't he nice?
He's not cool. He's full weird. He gets teased and they picture him as a bait. Anyway, remember pictures them as babies at the end.
It's coach?
He's the coach of the shit team that Bobby Boucher saves.
I can't even remember that. I need to watch that. Maybe we should do that soon. Is that in our era?
Yeah, it would be.
I think I'm going to hate it, unfortunately, but we'll see.
Abdullah Ablanga.
But A, I forgot he was in it, and B, I don't think I picked up on what a weirdo his character was when I first saw it as a kid. Like, he's pointing a knife at the kids. Yeah. fucking generation, you little shits.
It's pretty wild. I don't think you get away with that these days. No. Bring back the 90s.
Psycho.
That's what the teachers are saying. Reckon teachers watch that and they're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh. I'd love to do that. Yeah, bring back the knifey days. They used to hit kids with a ruler back in the day, our parents' generation.
Mm.
Jesus, can you imagine that?
Well, my brother in his first year of high school, which would have been, maybe 93? Earlier. 90, I don't know, something like that. They were just phasing out the cane because he nearly got it once.
Fuck.
He was shitting himself, but he didn't get it. They were in that war. We still had to do this, or are we not going to do it anymore?
So it was probably like still legal, but not necessarily.
Yeah, and I think they just made they were literally in the process of making a call not to do it anymore. So his knuckles.
It's pretty fucking wild, hey? Can't even imagine that.
Whack 'em.
Yeah, shit. And I guess there would have been so many teachers, even when we were at high school,
that
used to cane people.
Yeah, had done it for majority of their career and they're like, now I can't hit you, what am I going to do?
Fuck, that's fascinating. Make a movie about that.
Story by.
One real deep cut I want to acknowledge is the voice itself.
Go on.
Roger Jackson?
I don't know about this.
Well, this is – so the voice – obviously, in the movie, it's positioned as a voice converter thing, but it's a guy. That's his voice. He's a voice actor. And apparently they just used it because he actually spoke to the actors on set live on the phone. And initially they were just using it as a placeholder. And they were like – and they were going to, you know, replace it with something else later. And they were like, fuck, this is pretty good though, eh? And so he stayed in the movie and he's like the Pharrell Williams of horror movies.
Woo!
Yeah. You know, Pharrell used to just like – include his voice on the demo track and then they would keep it. Wow.
It's a bit different to DJ Khaled's.
Yeah. It's a little more subtle. A little more subtle. But this guy he does heaps of shit. He was in Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Laboratory, a bunch of video games.
Thought he was familiar.
Mass Effect, Minecraft, Fallout 4. He's in them all. He's done them all.
My name is Optimus Prime.
Not him. What was his name? Something Cullum?
Kurt.
Cullum. I don't think that's right. but yeah, he spoke to them live on set. So they reacted into a real conversation and they'd never met him.
Oh, nice.
So Mystique. So they made it like, you know, a little mysterious, a little spooky. And it all worked out quite well. The other week, Greg, you know how we did. Well, A, I think it's great that we did this movie now, having now done our foundational work in some of the classics, because I think we both had a few gaps in some of those, Halloween especially. Mm-hmm. Now that we've rounded out our kind of general knowledge base in the genre, I think it makes this movie hit all the right notes. And interestingly, when we did our little Halloween spooktacular back in October. Yeah, October.
Halloween's in October.
It's in October. And
every year.
Well, yeah, depending on the moon, I suppose.
Yeah. Repeater,
of course. And we talked about our Mount Rushmore of slashes, and I didn't even consider Ghostface from Scream. I didn't even consider. It wasn't even in my consideration set. And I was like, why? Why wouldn't I have thought of that?
Why?
And I think I just thought it felt too new and not classic enough yet, but it's fucking 25 years old. It's only like 10 or so years older than Freddy and shit. Like, or like 5 years older than Chucky or something. I don't know. I'm getting these dates wrong. But, you know, it's not that much newer than any of those. And it was a rebirth of a genre. It introduces a whole lot of new concepts. A pretty unique concept being that in each movie, it's actually a different killer. So this idea of someone taking the mantle.
Aha.
These are all unique things that I think it brings to the genre. And I think previously on my Mount Rushmore, I may have had just, you know, Freddy, Michael Myers, and just a bunch of other stabby stabbies. But I think I might put Ghostface up there for all the reasons I just mentioned. There's a unique thing here that he brings to the he or she brings to the table that is notably different to all of those others.
What about the Leprechaun?
Oh, the Leprechaun. Did I have him on there? He's no. A bit of fun. He's at the bottom of Mount Rushmore. You're like, you bastards, let me up there. I might put Ghostface up there.
Okay.
So maybe it's Freddy, Michael Myers, Ghostface, and then maybe Leatherface. I don't know. Maybe I don't have a fourth. Who did I have before? Chucky, maybe.
There was talk of Chucky.
I don't know. There was talk of Chucky. Yeah, so, you know, putting that out there, I know that's important for everyone to hear.
I think so.
But I think it speaks to a larger point, which is, fuck, this is a classic now. This is a 25-year sequel. This is like when they made a Halloween H2O like 20 years later. Like this is – we're in classic territory now with this one. It kind of elevated to classic without me really noticing, I suppose.
It's done sneaked up on you.
It done did, man. It done did. One notable mention, not a big topic, but the slowed down version of Don't Fear the Reaper in the soundtrack is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
The theme song or the title track for this film is the same as the Peaky Blinders.
Oh, is it?
Intro song.
Peaky fucking Blinders. I haven't watched that. I hear it's good.
By order of the Peaky Blinders.
I need a new show because I'm going to finish Succession tonight, I think.
Oh, yeah? You watched Dope Sick?
No, not yet. Have you watched it? It looks good.
I've heard a few reports now.
Yeah.
Timmy Bowen and another mate have been spruiking it.
Yeah.
It's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Yeah. Might check that one out. Hey, should we get into the verdict on this one?
Yeah, let's do it.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
I am the law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for?
Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further,
Your Honor. And that's all I have to say about that.
And overall thought for me, off the dome, I would say, yeah, man, as per my Mount Rushmore revisions, this is higher in my, I don't know, endless list of good films than I had initially thought. It's good stuff. I did watch it last Halloween, actually, I forgot to mention, and I think just my initial reaction to that rewatch, even before watching it this week, I was like, fuck, this is tight. Again, watching it in the mix with all those other classics, I think it hit harder than it ever had. And I think I love this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a rewatch. I'm really keen to see the new one now.
Yes, I'm very keen to see the new one as well, which I'll endeavour to do.
Yeah.
It's in cinemas now.
What about you, Greg? How's this? Is this a rewatch for you?
Yeah, this is a great movie. It's a great movie. It just, all the notes come together just so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Just so.
So go. It's all, you know, if you're in Australia, they're all on Stan.
Not ironically, it's a tight package.
It's the Gale Weathers of films.
Sydney Prescott or any of the other girls in these movies. Oh, I'll tell you one thing that was interesting actually. It was very white, and I noticed when I was watching Scary Movie 2 that they definitely endeavoured to correct that straight away.
Well, by that you mean they introduced two black characters that died immediately.
Yeah.
And then she had a black friend as well. I was thinking that actually. I was thinking that on Scream 2, it would have been interesting if they did something with that, like more overtly.
All right, you want some black people? Here's some black people. They're going to get stabbed too.
Yeah, or like.
What happened?
Have something that addresses that they've just kind of given her a token black friend, because that character didn't really even have much to do at all.
No, it was very, it was all very token.
Yeah. So.
But it was, it felt like a really like a, oh, you were, yeah.
Yeah. Like not in a knowing way, like not in like, I see what we did there. Like it's none of that's there.
It's not great.
It's not a self-aware thing.
Nah.
Yeah. It's not good. And then by Scream 3, yeah, it was all white again.
Weird.
Did Simpsons do it? There's some visual gags, but there's not really anything clip worthy that I could find. Porn parody. Let's have a look. I mean, there's a bunch actually. They're just called Scream, a porn parody. Wow, there's a lot. Whoa, okay.
There you go.
Hooly dooly. Yes. It passes it.
Okay, let's race through this so we can leave Tristan alone with his thoughts.
Well, let's just say special they weren't effects? All necessarily my – I'm not the target audience on all of those.
Oh, that's confronting.
Porn parody, Bechdel test, man, almost. I think there's – I don't know. Fuck, man, yeah, it passes. Because they talk about Sydney's – like Gail and Sydney talk about her mom and like there's all kinds of conversations. Yeah. There's heaps.
There's heaps.
The friend. Yeah, there's heaps. Yeah, fuck yeah. This legit passes.
Flying colors.
And I also do – I enjoy the dynamic of between Gail and Sydney, how they kind of hate each other but then they work together at the end. And by the beginning of the second movie, they hate each other again. Like it's, again. I do like that.
It's nice.
It's not too like, I like the girls and then we just had to work together and we all learned a lesson. It's like, no, we still don't like each other.
And then we go pick flowers or whatever girls do.
Yeah. FX test. I mean, it's not really an FX type movie, but I mean, there was some blood.
Corn syrup.
Yeah. My MVP has to go to David Arquette's Dewey. That was a tough one. Everyone's so good in this movie, but I just think that character and then learning that so much of what that character became was his take on it was
I gotta give it
to him. I mean, let's be honest, I'm probably not giving it to David Arquette in any other movie.
Oh, wow. Savage.
Well, I don't say that
ruin the compliment.
I don't know if I could name many other David Arquette movies. You know, he is a certified Bob Ross painting instructor.
No.
He's an interesting guy. And he's a wrestler. Interesting guy.
Interesting guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting guy. How about you? MVP?
I'll go Neve Campbell.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Good heroine.
Yeah.
Kicks ass in this.
Kicks ass. Good film. Good film. Go watch it. Now next week we're back on our Jean-Claude Van Damme shit.
Oh.
Knockoff. It's knockoff week. I know everyone's been waiting for knockoff.
Big time.
Yeah. Some people may have even seen it or heard of it. We saw it.
You can find it on YouTube.
Yeah, we had to watch a low-res version on YouTube, which may have skewed our take on it all. But you can tune in for that next week because we're back, baby. We're back. Welcome to 2022 Double Impact, I suppose we could have said earlier. All right, gang, leave a review.
Take care.
Take care.
Of yourselves and each other.
You move the air. Freestyle. See you next week, friends. Stay safe.